This week on Capitalism, Race and Democracy.
Capitalists are not really eliminating labor. They are partially dismantling labor in order to hire more and more platform work.
Professor Raquel Varela from Lisbon speaks about AI, genocide, imperialist war, and capitalism.
I'm a mental health expert. I'm not a tech expert. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just trying to get people help and get people care. But the robots have already replaced some of the work I do.
Ilana Marcucci-Morris, a licensed clinical social worker, discusses the fight over the use of chatbots to replace healthcare workers and the dangers to patients.
We are on strike because we are not willing to cut corners on patient and nurse safety.
Some 15,000 nurses of the New York State Nurses Association brave severe winter weather on picket lines in the Bronx and Manhattan in their strike against three large hospital networks.
This is bigger than your paycheck. How are we going to survive when AI, automation, and the billionaire class is getting richer, the ruling class is getting richer, but we're getting poorer in the richest country in the world? How is that even a thing?
During Black History Month, trade unionist Richard Hooker Jr., president of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia, is speaking out as President Trump's renewed racist attacks fuel anger across the Black community and the broader working class. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Paulina Vasilia. In February, dockers from six European countries carried out strikes against the genocide in Gaza, the militarization of Europe, and the attacks on the working class. One of those attacks is the use of AI and robotics to attack the working class and the growing threat of genocide and war. Professor Raquel Varela, who teaches in Lisbon, is a global expert on AI, automation, maritime transportation, and the global economy. She spoke with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
First of all, I think all workers and longshore workers have to realize that this is all about politics. And politics is about what project do you defend for society. So if the Trump administration is in power, or even before, Trump is even worse than the Democratic Party or the European Union, central liberal or right liberal. If these sectors are in power, they will use automation against workers and against dock workers. And I think the leaderships of the unions must ask themselves which side are they. Because all this is together. Bombing Iran, avoiding a peace process in Ukraine, destroying Gaza, intensification of labor, destroying public school and healthcare. All this is part of the same project. So if dock workers want to fight automation and want to fight for their jobs, they will have to fight for another kind of society where you do not produce for profit. You produce for people. And this means that they will have to ask why the ports are not public, why dockers are not public workers, why they are helping transport drones and guns to kill instead of food. So there is, if dock workers want to do something, they will have to do something with the rest of the working class, and they will have to ask in which world they want to live. And we see incredible examples, as in Genova port in Italy, in Greece, port of Piraeus, in Gothenburg in Sweden, we saw how workers, dock workers said, look, we cannot support a genocide supported by Israel, Trump administration, and the European Union. And I think all dock workers have to ask if they want to continue to leave politics in the hand of people that bring the world to the destruction we see, or if they want to pick up a project for cooperation, for common good. So, because if they will fight automation in a collective agreement that now we just support 30% of automation, and okay, we have a percentage of precarious work, and then we sign another collective agreement, okay, we leave a little bit more 10% of automation, they are destroying themselves with this if they don't ask what they are doing.
But it seems that it's a system problem. That's what you're saying. It's a capitalist system that's bringing in AI and robotics in order to increase their profits. But isn't that destroying capitalism if you eliminate all the workers?
Well, in the limit, you cannot have capital if you don't have workers, real workers. That is something a little bit difficult to explain here, but the profit comes from real work. The value, that is the wonderful thing about capital, Karl Marx's Capital book. Unfortunately, people do not read Marx, and they think socialism is what has happened in Soviet Union. Socialism is what has happened, for example, in Portugal in 74-75, where people democratically elected everyone in the workplace, public and private sector, in thousands of companies and public workplaces. And we have built one of the best healthcare systems in the world after the revolution, just with self-organization. This is socialism. And what Marx explains in Capital One, which in fact he goes in a dialogue with classical economy, is that all the value comes from labor. When you eliminate labor, you eliminate capital. But this is not possible at all. So what we are seeing is that more and more we are seeing a war economy. So capitalists are not really eliminating labor. They are partially dismantling labor in order to hire more and more platform work. So the big dream of them is that you can hire a docker, a truck driver, as you now hire food deliver, is the Uberization of the world. And after the along with the Uberization of the world, you have work economy. Because when we are seeing, when we look to the installed capacity, machinery, engineering, etc., and the uses of AI, what we see is that the majority of the profit now come from military sector or related with military sector, like electronic, aeronautics, So capital is not eliminating himself, he's driving us to war.
And the issue of fascism, as you know, there's a rise of fascism all over the world, and the techno-fascists that run the Trump government, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, David Sachs, these people believe that we need to get rid of any kind of democratic rights. That you have no regulation of the introduction of AI and robotics in the workplace.
Yeah.
This rise of fascism, do you think the working class and the unions can avoid a fight against fascism? And why is a fascism a deadly threat to the working class, to all workers and unions?
Well, fascism, above all, the definition of fascism is not just a type of dictatorship. Is a kind of civil war against the workers. And the main characteristic of fascism is militias against the working class, against organized unions, against workers. As you can see now in US, you have already elements of this when you have the militia ICE against migrant workers. This militia ICE against migrant workers is showing to the whole working class in US, even to the leaderships that now have wonderful salaries in many sectors, including dock workers. Now what Trump is showing is that there will be an ICE for every worker, because the role of fascism is to forbidden strikes, is to forbidden workers to fight for themselves. And they do this by create an enemy outside the nation, because the nation is the corporation. For them, the nation is the state, is the power, is the military sector, is the corporation. And they do this, they want to avoid the solidarity between the working classes. And that's the role of ICE. So, yes, I really think that if the working class it doesn't become politically active against fascism and doesn't ask themselves what kind of society we want to live, they will be directly targeted by militias that born directly from recruited outside the state or directly within the state, as it was in the 30s, in the 20s in Italy, or in the 30s in Germany.
And the leadership of the ILA on the East Coast of the United States has lauded Trump as a good person who's helping them. And in the ILWU, there's some leaders of the ILWU have said that their members are supporting Trump. And some of their members, of course, are making $200,000-$300,000 a year in the union. This, what do you see as transforming that? Because it seems there's a orientation or a business view of that unions are going to make them wealthy.
Well, I think this is a disgrace. I really think that the International Dock Workers Council that was born in Liverpool in the 90s was really, they had a revolutionary common way of moving and changing the world. It was marvelous to see that dockers together fighting for decent, not just decent jobs, decent people. And then we saw a big split where the IDC, it was a kind of going back to ITF policy, where this ITC leadership is pretty much what we saw and what we see in the ITF. The commitment of the leaderships of the unions with the bosses and with the so-called state stability is much bigger than the commitment with the rank and file workers. I cannot see anything worse than seeing the leadership of dock workers supporting Iran's bombing of Trump. A union has to support the workers in Iran, that the workers in Iran can fight against the dictatorship in Iran. A union can never support a bombing of an imperial state against another state. I'm still waiting to see the dock workers in US fighting against the genocide in Palestine and doing what they, some of them have done in the past against the apartheid. At the end, we all go to the same place. We all die and we don't go to heaven. We all die. And what we bring with us from this world is our dignity. And there is no dollars that can pay our dignity. So we really need to ask which side are we I think the working class in US, as we saw in Minneapolis, is saying to us again, our place is on the side of dignity, is on the side of the working class. And this cannot be just words. This has to be real organization of rank and file, democratic decisions, and a politics that is really defending the working class in the rest of the world, everywhere where there is a worker. We are there, as Tom Joad said at the end of the Grapes of Wrath of John Steinbeck. We are in every place where there is a work being beaten.
That was Professor Raquel Varela in Lisbon, Portugal, speaking about AI, genocide, imperialist war, and capitalism. She was interviewed by Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
Through the winter's ice and cold, down Nicolet Avenue, a city aflame fought fire and ice neath an occupier's boots. King Trump's private army from the DHS, guns belted to their coats, came to Minneapolis to enforce the law, or so their story goes. Against smoke and rubber bullets, in the dawn's early light, citizens stood for justice, their voices ringing through the night. And there were bloody footprints where mercy should have stood, and two dead left to die on snow-filled streets, Alex Pretty and Renee Good. Minneapolis, I hear your voice singing through the bloody mist. We'll take our stand for this land and the stranger in our midst. Here in our home they killed and roamed in the winter of 26. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Trump's federal thugs beat up.
That was Bruce Springsteen, Streets of Minneapolis. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Paulina Vasiliev. Ilana Marcucci-Morris is a licensed clinical social worker in Oakland, California, and a member of NUHW at Kaiser. She joins us as more than 32,000 Kaiser nurses and other healthcare workers remain on strike, fighting chronic short staffing and unsafe conditions. Marcucci-Morris explains why her union is also pushing back against Kaiser's use of chatbots to replace trained, licensed healthcare professionals, a move she warns threatens not only workers, but the safety and care of millions of patients at Kaiser and across the U.S. healthcare system. She spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate you having me and getting our important message out there.
Why don't you talk about the issue of AI? And I know your union has been in a long struggle at Kaiser to defend the patients, to get proper staffing, and one battle after another. It seems it never ends.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm part of the National Union of Healthcare Workers. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I work for Kaiser Psychiatry in the city of Oakland. And, you know, we could talk a bit about how AI is being rolled out. My employer has, and the healthcare industry already has a bit of a track record that they're increasing their use of artificial intelligence and reducing their need for nurses and other human healthcare professionals, myself and my colleagues included. So we've been negotiating our contract for the last 6 or 7 months now. And something that was a bit of a surprise, we did not expect AI to be a controversial topic this go around, because we had very recently secured language in our Southern California behavioral health contract with Kaiser Permanente that AI would be used to support our work, but it wouldn't be used to replace us. My colleagues in California, in Southern California, just got that language written in their contract just this last year, even as tech and AI continues to boom. So when we entered bargaining this past few months with the Northern California Kaiser behavioral health system, we asked for the very equivalent language, that AI would be used to support our work. And what I mean by that is, you know, feedback informed care, questionnaires, you know, in some cases, documentation tools, so long as privacy and consent issues are addressed ethically. We are not opposed to new technology assisting our work. In fact, I don't like working past my scheduled hours or on weekend. And if AI can cut corners a bit and help us, we're not entirely opposed to that. I am one of many of the recently displaced licensed triage providers. What that means is I used to be, and my colleagues used to be, the first stop in someone's episode of care. You speak with a licensed clinician for 10, 15 minutes to do a risk assessment and very minimally address the reasons you're seeking care, so that that provider can determine, is this an urgent care need? Do we need to do a wellness check? Is this person at risk of suicide or homicide? Is there a safety plan for intimate partner violence that needs to be addressed? That's the work that I typically do at the very beginning of a doctor referral or a patient reaching out to their health plan for behavioral health care. So already in the last couple years, Kaiser has reduce the need for human licensed triagers through the use of technology and unlicensed operators. So now you're less likely to speak to a licensed clinician when you need care in the beginning, and you're more likely to go on an app, answer a series of questions. Artificial intelligence mixed with automation and other technologies determines your care pathway. But there's still a need for me, because these robots get it wrong. The unlicensed operators get it wrong. I see patients weeks later that have deteriorated because they didn't get the care they needed at the beginning. And so now, instead of robust, front-loaded triaging and care that helps me feel good about the work I do, now I'm doing what one would call service recovery, fixing all the errors and the mistakes because someone booked this patient into the wrong appointment spot with the wrong type of provider. They needed something a bit more acute, urgent, severe, maybe in addiction medicine or one of my behavioral medicine colleagues. But instead, they got booked into to my appointments in psychiatry when they needed medication, and medication is out of my scope. But the bots and the operators don't understand scope. They didn't have to go to decades of education and state licensure under the guise of, this is what we need to do for public safety. Like, when I got my license from the state, I was told, you need to pass some tests because human safety is in your hands. So now these technologies and unlicensed operators, which, by the way, is against the law. We've already filed an unfair labor practice around that, and Kaiser has refused to change and address the problem. Really, I mean, unfortunately, we're living in a system where billionaires don't have to follow laws, and it's going to have to take probably a lot of harm to our community and enough patients rallying together for class action lawsuits, et cetera, right? I mean, I'm a mental health expert. I'm not a tech expert. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just trying to get people help and get people care. But the robots have already replaced some of the work I do. So, you know, in our bargaining, Kaiser will be like, well, you know, we haven't had to lay off any of you all before. There's still a need. There's always going to be plenty to do. There's a shortage of mental health workers, and why not get creative and find other ways to access mental health care? The problems are plenty, but really the cost to our public health is a really big problem. And they also kind of created this problem. AI is just the new version of denying care and keeping care cheap. They created the shortage problem. You know, I say all the time, I'm in California. I can't throw a rock without hitting 5 MFTs here in California. There is not a shortage of mental health providers. There's a shortage of people that are willing to accept factory line conditions because our jobs are very hard. We are patient facing, factory grind, patient after patient after patient. We're not given the time and the resources we really need. In fact, they're trying to take that stuff away. So they create this problem and then people are desperate. I don't blame anyone who has had a nightmare story trying to get mental health care from Kaiser and then they go to ChatGPT or some of these tools. Right. So people who are already struggling are tired to access the care because you get up against all these walls, you can't get the care you need, and either you're wealthy enough to go pay out of pocket and then you're paying double for healthcare. You're paying your premiums to Kaiser. They're getting rich. They're denying you care. And then you get desperate. So you go pay out of pocket. Well, if you're not rich, like most of us are not, and most Kaiser members are not, you are desperate. So they go to things like ChatGPT for emotional support. And then, you know, yeah, it hasn't been Kaiser that had, well, we've had suicides for other problems, but we have, you know, some of the more recent suicides around AI chatbots hasn't been at Kaiser's behest. I do think Kaiser's like, hey, ChatGPT is getting in on our market. Like, we need to be the ones making money off of those desperate people going to chatbots.
That was Ilana Marcucci-Morris, a licensed clinical social worker in Oakland and member of NUHW at Kaiser, discussing their contract fight over the use of chatbots to replace healthcare workers. That was Power to the People, John Lennon and Plastic Ono Band. As we go to air on February 9th, some 15,000 nurses of the New York State Nurses Association braving severe winter weather on picket lines in the Bronx and Manhattan approached day 30 in their strike against three large hospital networks, Montefiore, New York Presbyterian, and Mount Sinai. The nurses' union is calling for increased staffing to lower patient-to-nurse ratios, better protections against workplace violence, the exclusion of ICE from hospitals that menace immigrant patients and workers, as well as better wages and benefits that might enable nurses to live in the city where they care for their patients. Pressure is building, with Democratic Party political figures such as Governor Hochul and Mayor Mamdani expressing support for nurses while also calling for a quick end to the strike. The hospitals are using freelance nurses known as agency or travel nurses to scab, and management claims essential operations have continued, though there is no telling for how long. A similar strike 3 years ago lasted just 3 days. What follows are voices from a picket line on Thursday, January 29th at the Montefiore Wheeler campus in the Bronx.
One day stronger! One day longer.
One day longer.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Higgins, and I'm a registered professional nurse. And I'm also the president of the proud New York State Nurses Association. We are out here in the cold, fighting for our patients, fighting for our communities, fighting to protect our patients and the nurses from workplace violence. unfortunately, one of the richest hospitals in the state of New York have decided to put profit over patients. And we are here today to tell Dr. O, the $16 million you're making a year. 16.7. There you go. Instead of investing into replacement nurses, invest them into the communities. Invest them and remove the patients out of the hallways so they could get care with dignity. Safe nurse to patient ratio. Every patient deserves to be treated as a VIP, regardless of their zip code, regardless of their immigration status, regardless of their religion, regardless of their sexual orientation, regardless, period. And we are gonna be here as long as it takes. We will not cut corners when it comes to the safety of our patients. We will not cut corners. You know why? Because our patients are not for sale. We are here to care for New Yorkers. But in the meanwhile, we need to be taken care of as well. We need to have good practice. That's what we need. It is shameful that the nurses are not allowed to go in there and pick up their prescriptions because the pharmacy is in the hospital. The hospital have refused our members to walk in there to get their care. Shame on you, Dr. O. Shame on you. Shame on you. Shame on you. We want the hospital to be a place of care. We don't want ICE in our hospital. Patients come to the hospital to be cared for, not to be arrested, not to be terrorized. We are here to care for our patients. We don't want ICE in our hospitals. We are nurses. We want to care for our patients. ICE out at our hospitals. We don't want them in our hospitals. Our next speaker is a Muncie Fury nurse. Her name is Carolyn Jensen. Please step up.
Good morning. Welcome all our body unions. We welcome you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for the media. And let's hear the nurses in the house. My name is Caroline Johnson. I have been a registered professional nurse for 40 years. My last 9 years right here in the Weiler Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. I did not believe that we would have to be out here in the cold, fighting for protection, fighting for our justice, fighting for ourselves and our patrons. It is a shame. Never believed that would come to this stage. I'm on strike and we are on strike for patient care. We need more beds, less hallway patients, and that is priority. We need safe staffing. We need enough nurses to care for our patients. Our emergency rooms, our medical surgical floors are horrible when it comes to patient ratio. We, our nurses, want to be able to carry out their work in a safe and effective manner. We care for a vulnerable population here in the Bronx. They deserve good quality health care. More nurses mean better care. Better care. Yes. We also need Montefiore to care for the nurses, as our president said. They need more attention to improve their health. More nurses need more, means more care. We also need fair wages and fair benefits. We want our community to understand that we are doing this for their quality care. We are fighting to put patients above profits. Montefiore, we must put patients above profits. We are on strike because we are not willing to cut corners on patient and nurse safety. To my nurses out here, my comrades in this fight, especially the newer nurses who have never been on a strike before. We know it's not easy, but we take an oath to protect patient care, and we take that responsibility very seriously. I know it's scary to give up your salary. I know it's scary to give up your benefits. But these sacrifices are temporary. We are in this together. We are fighting to make tomorrow a better place for quality patient care and quality nurse staffing. So remember, we are in this together, hanging there. And when we fight, we win. When we fight, we win.
Our next speaker is really a trailblazer, always standing with the nurses, always standing with us. I am proud to present Senator Gustavo Rivera.
Thank you, President Hagan. How are the nurses today? My name is Gustavo Rivera, State Senator for the 33rd District in the Bronx and Chair of the Health Committee in the Senate. Now, first and most importantly, I want to take a moment to thank each and every single nurse who is out here. Each and every single nurse who is out here. Because the work that they do every day keeps New Yorkers healthy, keep Bronxites alive, and therefore I say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You stand with Bronxites, you stand with patients, so we must stand with you. Now I want to make sure that the message is clear. None of these folks want to be out here right now. None of these nurses want to be here. They want to be inside next to their patients, taking care of their patients. And one thing that I want to make sure that people understand, anybody who's listening, regardless of what you hear out here, this energy, this is not a party. What is out here, the energy that's out here, is frustration and anger that there has not been good faith conversations. This helps no one. It does not help the institution. It certainly does not help the patients. And particularly when the nurses are asking for what? For safe conditions, for better wages, for better benefits. These are the things that any unionized workforce demands. No unionized workforce wants to go on a strike, but they know that when they must, they do so, and they do so with energy and with strength. So I stand with you. We're going to make sure that we tell people, come back to that table. Negotiating good faith. Let's get these nurses back to work where they need to be, next to their patients. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And just bear in mind, nurses did not go out on strike. Management put nurses out here. Management refused to negotiate a fair contract. Management put us out here and decided to insult us by hiring replacement nurses and spend millions. Take those millions and dump them into the nurses and dump them into the community. That's what we're asking. Our next speaker is Monty Fury nurse Dahlia Empias.
Dahlia? Oh, yeah. Hi, my name is Dahlia. Can I hear nurses in the house? While we fight, we win. While we fight,
we win.
While we fight,
we win.
While we fight,
we win.
Okay, my name is Dahlia. I'm an ED nurse. I've been working in the ED for nearly 3 years now. And we're standing here today not of our choice. We didn't choose this to stand here in the cold for almost 27 days, 26 to 27 days, but we're here. Management forget that we are nurses. Nurses are resilient. And with the resilience, we are here. I would also like to thank our allies, our fellow unions joining us here today. We thank you so much. Standing strong with us. Woo! So we are fighting for workplace violence, okay? I work in the ED. We come across various populations, various patients. Most patients come in with emotions. And these emotions, unfortunately, are lashed out on our nurses. We come across violence. I've come across my fellow nurses being spit at, being kicked at, being punched. And we want safe conditions. We want a workplace without violence. So we stand in here today. We also stand in for our staffing ratios. In the ED, we have a zone where a nurse is going to have 10 to 12 patients, 10 to 15 patients. We are not able to deliver the quality care we want to deliver. We're here for our community. We're here for our patients, but we're here. Look in the emergency room with 15 patients, unable to deliver the care, unable to monitor our patients, unable to give medications in time. We have stat medications that have to be given in time. So we're standing here, we're not giving up. We're not giving up on our patients. We're not giving up on patient safety. We're not giving up on nursing safety. We are also here because we are here for our wages. The economy is changing. Everything is changing, and nurses are standing here to be able to keep up with the economy. So we are here standing, fighting for our patients. And there is no reason why nurses should be defending their co-workers in the hospital without any support, without protection. So we are here. Management has been very sluggish in listening to our demands, but we are not gonna waver. We are here standing strong. So one day longer.
One day longer.
One day longer.
One day longer.
Those were speakers at a nurse's picket line in the Bronx on the 29th of January. The speakers in order were NYSNA President Nancy Hagans, Montefiore nurse Carolyn Jensen, Democratic New York State Senator Gustavo Rivera, and Montefiore nurse Dahlia Empia. CRD producers add their voices to the call for victory to the New York State Nurses Association. You can find them on Facebook.
We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and family.
I wanted more than pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis, round long black lung disease and radiation. Hits the children before they've really been conceived. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. I wanted more than a pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis, for round long black lung disease, and radiation hits the children before they've really been conceived.
We bring more than just a little paycheck. You're bringing more than a paycheck. I'm bringing more. You're bringing more than just a little paycheck.
Well, now workers lending here, cause it's important that you know that whatever each job there is, the fear that disease will take its toll. If not disease, then injury. My Lord, maybe fall or not. And if not injury, then stress is going to tie you up in knots. And so we take home more than a paycheck.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock, More Than a Paycheck. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Polina Vasilyev. During Black History Month, Black trade unionist Richard Hooker Jr., president of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia, is speaking out against President Trump's renewed racist attacks, which are fueling anger across the Black community and the broader working class. Hooker, who is challenging Trump supporter Sean O'Brien for Teamsters president, spoke with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer about the lessons of the 1934 Minneapolis strike, the need for worker community solidarity, and why this moment demands a workers' party and a general strike in the United States.
This is Steve Zeltzer with Pacifica, and there's an important struggle now going on in the Teamsters Union. There's a struggle to provide an alternative leadership, an alternative program for the Teamsters Union, which is a critical union in the United States of transportation, of tourism, of workers throughout the industry, food processing, truck drivers, UPS, and it faces serious problems with AI and others. And joining us is Richard Hooker Jr. He's president of Local 623 in Philadelphia. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here again.
So Richard, you are organizing. You're right now in Southern California. What are the issues that you're bringing up with Teamsters about your concerns about the union and where it should be going?
So right now, if you look at what's happening within the working class, and specifically the Teamsters, there is a big divide on the issues of politics and working class issues. So our largest contract, which is UPS, massive layoffs, building closures, automation and AI. That is the biggest threat to all working people right now is AI and automation. It's taking our jobs, it's harming our pension funds, it's harming our families. What is the plan to push back and fight against that? Now, we understand that we can't stop it, it's here, but we have to make sure that we put language in place to protect jobs and preserve jobs, because our families shouldn't be struggling because billionaires want to get richer. We as working class people and Teamsters, what are we going to do about that? And I think there's no cry, there's no fight from our current general president. Why is that? Why is there no pushback on these issues? Because they hurt our members and the broader working class. What are we going to do to make sure our children have good paying jobs in the future? Everybody's not going to go to college. What are we doing to make sure they still have good paying union wages? Automation threatens that. What are we doing to push back on that? How are we training our members to do automation and AI? Are we training them? Are we preparing them for what's coming? We need to get more involved in these issues, because if not, we're going to be wiped out.
And as you said, this is not just an issue for Teamsters. There was a strike here in Los Angeles 2 years ago over the issue of AI for writers and the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA, and they said, and I interviewed them, that this was an existential issue for them. If they were able to bring this in, it would destroy them as a craft.
Absolutely.
It would destroy these workers. So it seems like this issue of protecting workers is not just a Teamster issue, it's a working class issue.
Working class issue. And I think that's what we got to do with our members, especially in the Teamsters. We do a good job of dividing our own members, people who vote, people who don't vote, race, creed, culture, sexism, racism, misogyny. The Teamsters do a great job of dividing each other, just like our bosses do. But this is a class struggle. Your boss is not your friend. Your boss is your enemy. I mean, we need to start thinking like that, because they don't care if you eat. They don't care if you have a pension. They don't care if you can take care of your family. It's the union's job to make sure that we still have these protections. But if I'm mad at you because you are or black or you're white or you are Republican or a Democrat or you trans or you're an immigrant, what does that do with my pension? What does that mean? My boss doesn't want me to have one. Let's focus on the issues that'll make sure that we can continue to take care of our families. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, white, black, green, yellow. What does that mean? I want you to make sure you can go home, put food on your table, retire with dignity, and your kids can also retire with dignity. What are we doing about that? Class struggle is the issue right now. This is not a partisan issue. The Democrats and Republicans are the same two wings on the same bird. They are. Now, you may get more from the Democrats, some of them. Absolutely nothing from the Republicans. So why not focus on having a workers' party where we can fight for the things that we want and demand? That's the class struggle. How do we get there? Fighting each other is not it. So this election is bigger than a contract. It's bigger than a pension. This is a class struggle. And our members need to wake up And it's our job as leaders to educate them on this is a class struggle. This is bigger than your paycheck. How are we going to survive when AI, automation, and the billionaire class is getting richer, the ruling class is getting richer, but we're getting poorer in the richest country in the world? How is that even a thing?
And one of the things that happened at the inauguration, you had all these billionaires,
yeah,
tech billionaires from Google, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, David Sachs. And aren't these the people that are bringing in AI to get rid of workers? I mean, it seems that in California, we had a situation where the Teamsters Union and other unions were supporting a bill that would require a driver if you have a truck over 10,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And Governor Newsom was supported by the unions, who gave millions of dollars to him, vetoed it twice. And it had near a unanimous majority in the legislature. They wouldn't overturn, they wouldn't, you know, reject his veto and overturn it. And yet, the unions are not combining together to fight this AI and to I mean,
It's again, this is a class struggle. Gavin Newsom vetoing this bill, it just shows you what we just talked about. Republicans and Democrats, two wings on the same bird. Now, to go back to the inauguration, if you remember, if everybody remembers, normally when a president gets inaugurated, he has his cabinet up there with him. Who did Donald Trump have up there with him? All the oligarchs. All of them. He's letting you know who his loyalty to. It's not to the workers. It's not even to the country. It's to the people who can profit off of our labor. And then I don't mean to, you know, throw my man under the bus, but guess what? Our general president was there. Why is labor in hobnobbing with people who don't want you to have a job, want you to have a contract, want you to have a pension, want you to have a health care? Why are we there? We should be fighting that. But like you said, we're not together, and we need to get back to that because we're not going to survive like this.
And a big issue that the Trump administration and the Democrats have said are people crossing the border and immigrants in this country, that they're the problem in this country. That's why people can't get jobs. And there's ICE, $170 billion is being spent on ICE as a military force. Yeah. They're shooting at people in Minneapolis. They're murdering people. And they're attacking immigrants. Workers are afraid. They're afraid to go outside their homes with their families. They're afraid their kids are going to be picked up in schools. What kind of country is this becoming?
It's becoming a dictatorial, autocratic country. One man wants to rule with an iron fist. We were listening to a song on the way here. Nobody's illegal on stolen land. Nobody. That person who is trying to make it better for his family, that's my brother, that's my sister.
They built the American labor movement in Chicago.
Absolutely.
In 1886, the 8-hour day. Those were immigrant workers.
Absolutely.
Who were fighting for better conditions.
Absolutely. And this is what happened when you believe that you're better than the people that put you in these positions. Donald Trump, all the ruling class people made their billions and trillions almost off the backs of working class people. Think about that. If working class people were to get together, realize that this is a class struggle, we will be the ones making the decisions. We will be the ones with the power. But we got to get to that point. We're not there yet. And as bad as this current administration is, I think what you're starting to see is that people are starting to realize that power. Look at what happened, what you said in Minnesota. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Donald Trump, if it wasn't for what's going on in the ICE.
He's provoking it. He's an agitator and a provocateur.
He definitely is. And we have to rise to this moment. All of us, everybody in the working class, union and non-union alike, because the unions bring up the entire working class. So we need to grab hold to our non-union brothers and sisters, along with our union brothers and sisters.
And the community.
The community. That's another a big portion of this. You know, I grew up in the church, and the church was a very big movement in the civil rights. Big movements happened in the church. Right, with Dr. King and Reverend Abernathy and all those kind of groups and Mega Evans, all these, it started in the community with the church. And the church is going to have to get involved in this too. They're going to have to. Community groups are going to have to get involved because all of us are getting attacked. Every single working class person in this country is getting attacked.
That was Philadelphia Teamster Richard Hooker speaking to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from Thomas O'Rourke and Steve Zeltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Polina Vasilyev. Thanks for listening.